Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
Hey, this is Sharon Vornholt, the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, and I'm here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. I'm excited about this podcast today. My guest is someone who's built a big rehabbing business in San Antonio, Texas, Danny Johnson. Now, a lot of you probably know Danny from his very popular blog, Flipping Junkie, where he's chronicled his path in rehabbing, and I know a lot of people are very familiar with this. So let's just dive right in and get going. It's great to have you here today, Danny.
Hey, thanks, Sharon. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I know that you've got a pretty interesting story, so why don't we start off by telling everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got started investing in real estate.
Okay, well, my wife and I, my wife Melissa and I have been investing as a team. The company has just mostly been made up of us, and we've been investing in San Antonio for 10 years now and rehabbing since the very beginning. And we do wholesaling, and we've done, owner financing and rentals and things like that. And so we've kind of done a lot of different things, short sales and, but our focus has mainly been the rehabbing and the wholesaling. And when we got started, over 10 years, I keep saying 10 years, it's probably 11 or 12 by now, but, time flies so fast. But in the beginning, I started, I graduated from college and I was, I had a degree in computer science, so I started software developing, developing software for a company. And was in the office all the time and just realized that sitting in that office with no windows because it was a defense contractor and so we had security clearances and everything. Mm-hmm. But sitting in that office with no real natural light day after day from, morning until late afternoon, just wasn't for me. Just more and more I wasn't really happy with what I was doing working for somebody else. And most of that was probably just, working for somebody else rather than the software because I do enjoy developing software still. But my father had started, flipping houses. He started working with another investor that was real experienced in town. And, I saw how much fun he was having, how much excitement there was for him. It's like his whole life kind of turned around and became like really exciting again. And he was having so much fun buying up houses, fixing them up and I was just sitting in my office thinking about how he was out there driving around, to me, probably my idea was maybe a little bit more exciting than maybe it was, but, the grass is always greener, but it really was, fun once we started doing it. But that's how I got kind of the bug to get into it and, started looking at buying my first house and decided that I wanted to buy a house that needed some work, and that it would be an investment as well as being my first house. And so I bought a HUD home that needed some work. And, with the HUDs, you owner-occupants get, first dibs on most of them, mm-hmm. As far as, investors can't offer until a certain number of days afterwards. So you have an advantage when you're going to live in it yourself. But so after a lot of research and, I learned a lot in that period looking for that house. And I think one of the big things, and I don't know that I've shared this a whole lot, but one of the big things I think I learned was that it's not easy to find a good deal, even if you have the situation with the HUD where you have an advantage over investors because they can't offer while you can in the beginning. But to find a true deal was pretty difficult in the beginning and, realizing that it did take that amount of time. It probably took me six or more months, I think. Mm-hmm. Obviously part-time and figuring out what was a real deal. But just knowing...
Hmm? I have to say, don't you think that's one of the hardest things is one of the downfalls right in the beginning is you don't really know what a good deal is. You think you do.
Right, yeah, and just, you know, you always end up with, I think most people probably end up with, you know, thinking, well, other people have done it, but they have some other different situation or circumstance. Like, they're in a different town where maybe there's a lot of deals to be had, and in my town there's just not. Or, you know, they have some kind of relationship with somebody that enables them to be able to find these deals or get these deals before other people do. You know, you come up with excuses, and you know, the fact of the matter is, it's just a matter of sticking to it and trying different things and being persistent. And it's really hard because people want to get in and just do one. You know, they just want to get in and find one right away. And if it doesn't happen right away, then, you know, if they don't have a certain amount of passion for it, you know, or desire to do it, you know, they just, you know, kind of bow out and find something else to do. And it's a shame because it's, you know, it's getting over that first real hurdle, you know, getting that first deal where things start getting easier. And I think a lot of it is having faith. You know, it's like once you've done one, you know it's possible. And there's something with the mind connection there with, you know, with having that faith that you end up, I think, doing more without realizing it to get the next one because you know they're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you really hit upon something. People tend to quit before they get started. There's so many guru types out there that make it sound like push a button, you know, you don't have to really do any work, and then the deals are just going to magically appear. And that just isn't the way it happens. Finding deals is work.
Correct. You know, there are cases where people do find them right away, and and you know, I'm sure it happens all the time. But knowing that, you know, most likely it's not going to happen that way. When you go into it that way, then you kind of know. And maybe sometimes people go in and there's some fear there, and there might actually be a real deal, but they're not real confident, and so they kind of, you know, aren't able to you know, buy the place right away because they're not confident about it. But yeah, you're right. You know, that's a big thing. And I think a big reason why so many people don't really, you know, make it in the business.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole push button thing, you know, that's a whole.
That's another whole story, isn't it? I think, you know, you hit upon another thing too, which you talked about excuses. It is so easy to come up with reasons why it won't work for you, it won't work in your area, there's no deals. And I read a book back a year or two ago by an author that I really like, Wayne Dyer, and it's called Excuses Be Gone. And that's a book that, boy, everyone should read it, but real estate investors should read it, because it's so easy to slip back in that place where you live with the excuses of why it won't work for you. And he basically just says, get over it. Lose the excuses. And I think when I talk to real estate investors all over the country, that is by and large what they've done. They've owned up to the fact that it's hard, that it's work, but that they're going to do it. They have this passion for the business, and they lose the excuses, and they just get to work.
Right. Yeah. No. I think that's really all there is to it. And I think when you acknowledge the fact that you are making excuses, you can move forward. You know, when you stop and say, and that's one of the things that, you know, my wholesaling training that I talk a lot about. It. The first whole week is basically on your foundation and your mindset, because without the right mindset, you know, you're really setting yourself up for most people setting themselves up for failure. But you know, when you realize that what you're doing is making an excuse, like So, you know, for an example, say you have some kind of adversity, right? So you know, there was a deal that it was supposed to be a deal that you found, and you went and looked at it, and you spent 2 days analyzing it, you know, and you felt like maybe you needed to have another investor or somebody, contractor, come over and look at the house to help you figure something out. And that cost you a couple of days. And so by the time you realized, hey, this is a great deal, I'm going to put my offer in, you put the offer in and find out that someone else had already put it under contract the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of saying, you know, there's two ways to look at that situation. You know, for one, it's an adversity, and you have to find the benefit out of it. There's always a benefit out of every adversity. And if you look at, you know, there's two ways to look at it. If you look at it the one way, which is, you know, well, the other investor probably knew the agent or something, or the other investor, you know, has this or that that I don't have. You know, and then so you're reasoning the wrong way and you're thinking about the wrong things. What you should be doing is thinking, how can I change this next time? How can I get that offering quicker? How can I, you know, and so you focus, you know, you ask the right questions, I think is the way Tony Robbins, you know, says to do things. There's always two ways to look at things and you have different questions to ask, and you have to make sure that you're always asking yourself the right question.
That's a great point. And you are right. There's always a benefit to every situation. And I have lost out on deals personally where in hindsight turned out to be a good thing too. So you just have to move forward. And I've also in the beginning missed out on deals. I think everybody does that when you're new and you overanalyze and you don't really know how to speed the process up. It's just a part of the learning process. And like you said, you got to get your mindset right before you can ever start really doing deals and building a real estate investing business. So you mentioned that you were working, you had a job and you started working with your dad. So did I understand correctly that you started out part-time?
Right, I did start up part-time. I wasn't really working with my father. He was there to help out. And, you know, I did end up getting a mentor and you know, getting some training through him. But it wasn't necessarily training. It wasn't training in the respect of going somewhere and having to say, start here and go do this. It was more of, you know, I'm on my own to learn this. Mm-hmm. And whenever I come into a situation that I don't know how to answer, I can't find an answer to, then I have someone to ask. And I think, you know, mentors in that respect are wonderful and priceless. But it's, I think a lot of people, you know, and I think that's why so many people spend $20,000 to go to some 3-day seminar. It's because they want the start to finish handholding. And I don't think that's, you know, the right way to maybe go about it. You know, if you have the passion to do it and you can go, and there's so much available on your blog, on my blog, on other people's blogs, mm-hmm. you know, on different forums to learn. I know there's a lot of information. It's kind of hard to narrow it down. But there are, you know, less expensive courses as well that can give you really detailed information to start with, you know. And then you take that information and you go start doing things and you start, you know, doing the marketing, getting calls. And there, you can get pretty far, you know, doing that. And, you know, the whole process, when you do things that way too, when you're kind of like a self-starter and you're able to go in and not have somebody to tell you every single, because that's, you know, that's really an employee mindset. You know, if you're an entrepreneur mm-hmm. and you're going out and you have a different mindset to where you, like, it's up to me, you know, I can start doing things. And when you do that, you know, getting a mentor, if you don't have one, is much easier because they see that it's not going to be a hand-holding situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely. Mentors are important. I like to say there's kind of a trio of things. If you have mentors, accountability partners, and you can get in a mastermind group with like-minded people, you will just soar and grow so much faster than you would if you go it alone totally. And true, you can learn a lot of things from blogs like ours and from the national investing sites. But there's going to come a day when you need something more. You need a course. You need a paid. You're going to have to fork out some money and pay for some mentoring or some coaching. If you don't want to be stuck where you are today, if you want to take a giant leap, you're going to have to invest in yourself. Wouldn't you agree with that?
No, I completely agree with that. And I think there's too much of the – I understand the guru bashing. You know, I've done it myself, mm-hmm. you know, as far as, like, you know, the people charging $20,000-$50,000 are not really, you know, it's not a way for you to succeed just because you spent the money and went and sat mm-hmm. in some course, you know, or some seminar for a week or 3 days or whatever it is. But, you know, I think too many, like, I see too many people complaining about anybody that provides any kind of information for any kind of charge as being like a guru and saying that's the wrong mm-hmm. way, you shouldn't be charged. You know, it's an investment, and these, there's a lot of things out there that cost, it's, you know, it's unbelievable. Even if they only cost, less than $1,000, what they provide is worth tens of thousands of dollars worth of education, you know, or more. And so it just, I don't like to see people, because I think that when, it's an excuse really, when people go and start saying that, it's because they don't want to, they're not willing to commit enough to put some money up to get something to help them. You know, it's an investment. It's not just giving somebody else money. If you're looking at it like, well, these people are just getting money from me, you're looking at it the wrong way. I mean, but, so I think there's just too much of that. I think, you know, there's a lot of good information out there. And if you're not willing, you know, just to pay a little bit for it, you know, I think you're missing out.
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't know a single successful real estate investor that has not spent money on their education. Not one. You can't grow from that beginner stage without making an investment at some point in time. And I think what courses and mentors and things like that do is they shorten your learning curve tremendously. They take you out of that state of overwhelm that you spend most of your time in when you're brand new. You just, mm-hmm. there's so much information. And like you said, it's all out there, but you need a way for it to be compacted and put into some form where you can then, if you need to be an action taker, you need to have that entrepreneurial mind, but then you can take that information and you can run with it. And that's the second component. You have to do something with the information.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, when we mentioned that, you know, all that information is out there, but there's so much information and there's so many different ways to do things. When you pick a couple things, or even one is probably best, you know, one that you feel like you want to start with, one avenue into investing, because there's so many different ways to do it. If you pick one and try to learn that and kind of keep your mind from wanting to go from learning one thing to another, you're going to be far better off, because that's another thing that people stay in their comfort zone doing, is like, I'm going to learn wholesale, I'm going to learn rehabbing, I'm going to learn short sales. And they never do anything, because they just, it's easier to go and learn the next thing. But if you focus on one thing and try to take action and start doing and making money in that, you're just going to take off. You know, it's like you're going to have a much better chance of succeeding. And, you know, an example of people that I think that I can tell when, you know, it's like learning all this disjointed information online without having a clear course of action from something is, you know, an example I have, you know, several months ago I was having dinner with my family, and I, you know, the phone rang, and it was a local number, and so I thought, well, you know, it could be a deal. And sometimes I do, believe it or not, answer the phone at dinner time when I, you know, think it might be a possible deal. But a lot of people won't do that, but I do still sometimes. And I took the call, and it was somebody from online, and they got my number, and they were calling and asking, you know, almost frantically, can you analyze, you know, this deal for me? How can I make this deal work? And I said, well, I'm sorry, I'm having dinner. I thought maybe it was a lead or something. Could you please send me an email with all the details? I'd be happy to look into it and try to help you figure it out. And so the email came. You know, after dinner, I went and checked the email, and it was there. And, you know, the quote deal, unquote, was the first thing from a possible deal. I mean, the house was worth maybe $100,000. The people owed maybe $105,000.
Oh my.
They were not behind on payments. The house wasn't a wreck. You know, and you know, there was like no possible way this could ever be a deal, in my opinion. And, you know, it was in an email it asked, you know, like I had, it almost assumed that I had some magic wand that I could figure out some way of turning that into a deal by some method of doing sandwich lease options or whatever, you know, and I thought it was almost painful. It's like, just because someone's motivated to sell their house does not mean that it's a possible deal in any way.
Right.
You know, but I think when you're learning a bunch of disjointed information, people are saying, well, I did this and I did that, and it seems like everybody's doing all these different tactics all in their business when it's not necessarily the way. I think most successful investors are really only focusing on a couple different strategies.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you have to master a strategy, and then you will reach a point where you might branch out and try something else. You may be deep into a strategy and look up one day and go, you know, I don't really like this one. I really don't like being a buy and hold landlord. but I've got this information and now I can turn that around and I can rehab and I can maybe wholesale the ones that I don't want. So I think you're right. I think the key is to master something and then branch out from there. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about where you found your first deal or two. How did you do that? Did you just come across it, or were you marketing? How did you come up with your first deal or two?
Okay, when we started, my wife and I, when we started, mm-hmm. we put out bandit signs,
mm-hmm.
and we did driving for dollars, where we drove and looked for, houses that seemed vacant and in disrepair, and then mm-hmm. found the owners and sent postcards to them. And a lot of people do that. And the bandit signs, of course, just for sake of disclaimer, a lot of places they're not legal or you can get fined for them. So, always check with, where you are, your city, about putting those up. But, but that's mostly what we did was doing, both a combination of driving for dollars and the bandit signs. And I think our first deal came from a postcard from driving for dollars, and the second one was a bandit sign.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you started the way a lot of people start. You just get out there in the trenches and you're not spending a lot of money on marketing,
right?
But you're spending your time to
right.
find those first few deals. Yeah. I think that's a great point to make. I spoke with a gal a while back and she was in a job, very much the same story you hear from other people. And she did not have marketing money. So she started calling for sale by owners and expired listings. Now, cold calling is not for the faint of heart, in my opinion, but she was determined to get a deal. And she's a personable gal, too. So she called, and I'm telling you, it wasn't about a week, and she struck gold and hit one and made a nice five-figure payday. I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 or $30,000. It's what everybody, hopes for. But then she had the money to say, okay, now how can I use this and set up some marketing? But, she still occasionally does cold calls because she says it just works for me and it's free.
Right. I think a lot of people find what fits them, because there's a
mm-hmm.
You might think, well, I can do all this stuff, but once you get into it, you'll find, I think, that there's several different things that you just prefer to do, maybe, or just fit
mm-hmm.
your business, your personality, and everything better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think, I guess I could go into, one thing I did want to talk with you about regarding things like that is there's a lot of, and I've been thinking about this more and more lately, and, I think a lot of people with the internet these days and everything and the wealth of information that's so easy to access that people tend to not think as much. They don't take the time. Instead of me thinking through some things, I'm going to get online and type in the search and see what
mm-hmm.
other people have thought. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, how do I find deals? So I'm going to get online and I'm going to find out what other people say.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Some of the people that I am training and that I work with, I try to tell them, look, there's some ways and there's known, ways that, like bandit signs, they work, and driving for dollars works. But if you can, when you've got time, when you're not doing something else and you're just kind of twiddling your thumbs, stop and try to think of a way to reach other people, that might be new. And you can say, well, maybe everything's already been thought of. Everything's been done, but maybe it hasn't been done in our area. So if you can, if you really can think of that and maybe look into other industries at how they market and find some kind of connections for our industries and find a way maybe that so many people are doing, then you can avoid all that competition and have a way to get deals that not many people or maybe nobody else is doing because
mm-hmm.
you simply didn't go look for the common knowledge. Tried to think and come up and innovate. And do it that way. And it's the way I think a lot of successful businesses these days are. Like, my family and I ate at Chili's, I think it's Chili's, last night, and they have this little kiosk thing at every table.
Mm-hmm.
And the kiosk, it was really nice because you could, if you want to refill on a drink, you just punch in on the touch screen there. And then the waiter would bring the drink. You don't have to wait for them to come by and tell them. And then, you know, there were little games on there the kids could play with and stuff like that. And then when it was time to leave, instead of waiting for the waiter to come back, and people with kids, you know, understand me when I say, you know, I've got five kids, but, you know, two of them are smaller. And mm-hmm. sometimes they get pretty unruly, you know, after being in a chair for a while. And so it's, you know, sometimes you're sort of in a hurry to leave the restaurant. And it's like, you don't want to wait for the waiter to come back if they're real busy for 30 minutes, you know. But this little kiosk thing, you could just swipe your card on there and pay and then leave.
Yeah, that's a great
point. You wanted to leave. But anyway, that, you know, what that relates to is the fact that, you know, they're, instead of having a working, you know, Chili's has been around for a long time, and instead of having a working system and just staying with it, never changing,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
they don't keep up, they don't innovate.
Yeah, that's it. They found a way to innovate, to be different. And I think if you stop and think about real estate investing, it's a pretty standard business model on the whole. You know, we buy houses and then we do something with those houses. And sometimes it gets a little bit hard to think of a way to be different from your competition, because I think, don't you think today, great customer service is expected everywhere. You have to have that to stay in any kind of business. But I know in my area, you think, how can I be different from the guy over here or the guy over here? And it gets tough to innovate sometimes in this business.
Right, but I think you hit the nail on the head. If you're going to focus in a way of thinking, you know, and trying to innovate, I think it's in the realm of customer service. You know, how can you stand out in the seller's mm-hmm. mind? And what I mean, when I say seller, I'm talking about buying from private sellers, obviously.
Right.
Or you're marketing from people that you're going to buy their house directly from them. And, you know, so if you, because I've said it from day one, I think I get a lot of deals that my competition don't get, even sometimes whenever I'm offering less than my competition, simply because the people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And they've told me that, and that's all I know. I'm not just saying it because I'm egotistical or anything, but, you know, it's the, I think a lot of people maybe go in and think, well, I need to put on this appearance that I have a lot of money and I can buy their house, because I don't want them to think that I'm not able to buy their house. Or they just feel like they need to be real professional because they have a business now, and so they sort of end up, you know, dressing a little bit corporate or something and coming to a house. And most of the sellers I've bought from, I think, you know, they're sort of intimidated by that maybe, or just,
mm-hmm.
you know, an automatic wall comes up because you're almost dealing with sort of a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you go in and it's not something where you're, you know, it seems like your goal is just to get that house. Like, that's all you're there for. And people put up walls and they don't want to open up and talk to you and get comfortable. And I think when you go in just being you and not being so concerned with trying to, like, seem a certain way or anything, just being friendly, I think goes a much longer way than trying to be super professional.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I tell people, you know, don't show up in your, with drywall dust all over you and your ripped jeans and your muddy work boots, but be aware that you're dealing with real people. And they don't want to see somebody show up in a suit, to be honest. They don't want to see a banker walking in the door. They
right.
want to see a person that they can relate to, that is friendly. And I'm always amazed by people that they don't really know how to start the conversation. You know, I don't know. It's in my mind, and I can tell just from talking to you, it's a matter of an introduction and, hey, I'm Sharon or I'm Danny, and then you just move on with the conversation. It doesn't have to be some great big formal spiel, you know, I've been in business, whatever.
No, yeah, I wouldn't do that.
They don't care. All they want to know is, can you buy my house, and how can you solve my problem now? That's all they care
right.
about.
Right, and as far as coming, like you said, some people might struggle with what to say. It's like, don't have a canned speech. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you get there, you introduce yourself, and you say, oh, you know, this place has a lot of potential. It might be stinky. It might be filthy. It might be falling
mm-hmm.
down. You know, but I'm never one to go around and say, oh, well, this is incredible. I can't believe this place is still standing. Or, I can't believe you're living here. You know, stuff like that. You know, just always like, oh, this place has potential and, you know, I can do this and that. And the conversation will just come. If you don't have something to say right away, don't say anything. You know, walk
mm-hmm.
around the house and eventually they'll say something that will strike mm-hmm. up a conversation. or you'll see pictures on the wall that maybe you can relate to. You have kids, they have kids.
Right.
You don't have to force it. You know, if you're forcing it, probably just don't say anything. You know, but if you, if it comes to you, and you might, like I'm mostly an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing that did surprise me in this business getting into it was how easy it was for me to talk with sellers. You know, at first maybe not, but after a couple times of visiting homes, all of a sudden, you know, I just got comfortable and, you know, so you might feel like, oh, that's so difficult, I don't think I could ever do it. But just, you know, give it a shot and you might be surprised.
Well, I tell people the time, I think the time to open up the conversation is when you first speak to them on the phone. And what I like to do is say, tell me about your house. And that just opens the floodgates, don't you think?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, the why are you selling, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and let them
right.
speak about all of it. And then that can lead to, oh, I can understand, yeah, that does sound like a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to kind of replicate and show somebody, you know, it's just, you mm-hmm. kind of just do it. And, but anyway, I agree with that.
It is kind of hard. I was speaking to somebody. It's amazing how many people I talk to that say they're really introverts because I grew up as an introvert. And somewhere long about middle age, I kind of got over that somewhat. But it is tough for a lot of people. And you have to, I think you hit upon one thing that I used to tell people, my inspectors, when I had a home inspection company. Walk up to the person, introduce yourself, and find something. You might say, gee, I love your truck, you know, or
right.
what great landscaping you have. There is always something positive that you can say that kind of puts the other person at ease and opens the door to the conversation. And people need to possibly role play with someone, you know, pretend to get someone on board and pretend a little bit and role play. But in the end, the only thing that solves that problem is actually doing it. You have to just get out there and do it.
And I think, you know, you mentioned putting people at ease, and that's huge. I mean, because most mm-hmm. people are sort of embarrassed by the state of their house and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why they're calling investors.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these houses can be sold to realtors, but the people don't want to because they're embarrassed. And
right.
I think, and that happens a lot. So if you can put them at ease, because they're just thinking, what's this guy thinking? You know, he thinks, you know, what does he think of me because of, you know, how his place is. So if you can, like, you know, make it light right away and have put them at ease, then it becomes much better because then all of a sudden they can let out a deep breath and,
mm-hmm.
you know, feel comfortable. And as far as, you know, like you mentioned, doing some role play and things like that, and I mention a lot on the blog, I think, when people are getting started, even when you start getting those first few calls, even if it's furthest thing from a deal, I like to say schedule to see it anyway.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, well, this isn't really a deal at all, so I don't have any stress on going over there needing to commit to it because I know it's not a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, don't waste people's time. You know, if they're real busy or facing foreclosure, you don't want them to, you know, you don't want them thinking they found a buyer and, you know. But if it's a different situation, you know, and that's another thing. I don't want to go off on a tangent too much, but a lot of people think that when you're buying from sellers, you're buying from people facing foreclosure, and it's just not the case in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I deal with a lot of people that inherit properties, and not just because I market probate, but mm-hmm. because I do marketing in general, and a lot of times it's just that people inherited a house that they have no use for, and they may have rented it for years, or their brother lived there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times that's the sort of situation, so don't feel like if you do this kind of marketing, you're only dealing with people that are in like some tough situation and, you know, worrying about taking advantage of them. You know, people say all the time, I'm not going to do marketing to sellers because, you know, it's taking advantage of them. And I say, well, you have the wrong mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you correct that and get over that, you know, good luck to you because it's wrong.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. You know, I cannot tell you, and I'm sure you've had the same experience. You get a closing and somebody will walk up and hug you and say, thank you so much
right.
for helping me out of this terrible situation. And their terrible situation, like you said, they may have inherited a house that they literally can't afford two sets of utilities. It may not be something huge like a foreclosure, but it may be the matter of them having food on the table because they can't they can't handle this other property, for whatever the reason they've gotten into this situation. It's not even necessarily something huge, Jones. Don't you find that?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's just they want the simplicity, and it's not that they're stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, when I had somebody email me saying taking advantage of sellers and things like that, and I was just taken aback. It's like, if you've never done this, you don't know what it's really like, and your assumptions are incorrect. And basically, what you're telling me is that motivated sellers are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not the case. You know, when you, I think I wrote an article in Bigger Pockets for it, but you know, that's a big mis. I always get this wrong. Misperception or conception? I don't know. My wife.
Yeah, misconception.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, if you want to believe that, go on believing that, because it leaves less competition for me. You know, these people, if you go to my house buying website and look at the testimonials, you know, those are all in people's own words and what they, you know, how they felt about how everything happened. And, you know, you wouldn't get those if it was a case where people were begrudgingly selling their house to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.